Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hej och välkomna till Vinpratarna. Det var ju några veckor sedan vi hördes och det beror på att det har varit väldigt mycket jobb och resor och allt möjligt för oss på olika fronter. Men nu är tanken att vi ska slänga ut ett gäng små pärlor här innan midsommar och sommaruppehåll. Idag blir det fokus på en spännande italiensk region som heter Emilia-Romagna och inte minst då en producent som heter La Stoppa. Jag har nämligen träffat Nico Schiacchitano som sedan några år tillbaka jobbar med det mesta av det mesta på La Stoppa. Han är i vingården och i källan och reser runt som ambassadör. Själva domänen ägs och drivs sedan början av 70-talet av Elena Pantaleoni. Och här fokuserar man nu mer på inhemska druvor med minimal påverkan i vinmakningen. Emilia Romagna är ju på många sätt lite förbesedd vinregion, men det händer en hel del kul i området. Och La Stoppa är ju en av de producenter som verkligen går i främre ledet vad det gäller att stärka ryktet. Och därför tyckte vi att det här var en intervju som kändes väldigt kul att göra. Jag ska också säga att själva intervjun gjordes utomhus på en lummig bakgård på Södermalm här i veckan. Och därför förekommer det lite ljud i bakgrunden. Det är flygplan och det är någon som står och hamrar här lite grann. Men det är rätt mysigt, lite fågelkvitter också. Så, att, så kan det vara. Trevlig lyssning, så hörs vi inom kort igen. Skål! First of all, welcome, Nico Schiacchitano.
Thank you.
Grazie. Grazie mille. You're here because we're going to try some wines from La Stoppa, where you work, La Stoppa in Emilia-Romagna. But first of all, tell us a little bit about you, yourself and your way into the wine business, because obviously you're not from Italy.
No. A long time ago, my family did come from Italy, but yeah. No, my American accent definitely throws people off when I'm pouring Italian wines. I grew up in a small place in Indiana and kind of left there immediately after high school and moved to the West Coast. And while I was studying in university, I became very interested in wine and I started kind of focusing on that. I mean, supporting yourself through university with restaurant work it's a very common thing. So after staying about 7 years in Seattle, I decided to move to California to focus more so on wine and also to work at a restaurant that only focuses on wines from the central and south of Italy. Mm. So my heritage being Sicilian, this was kind of like I want to go here, I want to learn about this. And so after years of working there, my boss, Shelley Lindgren is her name, she's my mentor, one of my best friends still, and she offered me as a gift the opportunity to go work Harvest. The choice was Harvest or go work or go to Vinitaly. And all of my friends were like, don't go to Vinitaly, it's a total, it's chaos, go work Harvest. And she asked me where I wanted to go, and I chose Sicily, and I ended up working for another producer who's imported by Klaus here, it's Arianna Occhipinti.
Yeah.
So I worked for her in 2011, 12, and 13. And she invited me to move there in 13, and I think Americans take with them when they're in a dining experience, they take with them more the stories behind the wines and not so much the technical information. I think being a country that's founded on immigrants, it's important to relate to them with things that they can romanticize about, and that's kind of how I ended up romanticizing about moving to Italy and learning more about production and wine. So Arianna, she happens to be very good friends with Elena. Elena's essentially her mentor.
Yeah.
And so between working with Arianna, I somehow became very good friends with Elena at the same time.
Okay.
And then I, of course, got kicked out of the Schengen because I didn't have a visa.
Oh.
So I moved to the UK. And while waiting to return, I finally had the opportunity to return, and Elena told me, don't go to Sicily. Come visit me at La Stoppa. And La Stoppa is, if you've been there, it's a breathtaking place. It's in the first foothills in the Apennine, in our Apennine, in the Trebbia River Valley. And her house is probably a 15th century castle.
Oh, okay.
So when I visited the first time with Arianna, we drove up in the winter, and I mean, every season the house looks amazing, but when you drive up in the winter and then all of a sudden you're in the vines and you see this beautiful place.
Cool.
When she asked me to come move there, I was like, hands down, yes, I'm coming.
And when was that?
That was in 2014.
Oh.
So I was working off and on there for the last 4 years, going between London and Italy. I worked at a restaurant called Noble Rot. I was in charge of the wine there for the last year and a half, 2 years. But part of my stipulation of working there was the ability to continue a collaboration with Elena and Giulio at La Stoppa, because it's very important to me. So finally, in about 8 months ago, my husband and I moved from London, and we live in a village of 14 people, about 10 minutes away from the winery, in kind of a forgotten river valley in Emilia. As a North American, when people think of Emilia Romagna, they immediately think of sparkling wine, they think of Lambrusco, they think of Sangiovese, they think of Albana. And where we are, we're in the kind of northwest corner of Emilia, where Piemonte and Lombardia are bordering regions. And there's a lot more, I think, similarities in the winemaking and the varieties we work with those regions.
Yeah.
More so than with the rest of Emilia-Romagna.
Because I've understood that Emilia-Romagna, it's a hard region to define, because it's a lot of climates, a lot of different soil types and all that.
Especially where we are in our region there. You can go one river valley over and you'll be twice as high in elevation, and you look down and there will be seashells on the ground. Whereas where La Stoppa is, it's a terroir that's completely different. It's very old red clay. No nitrogen in the soil, very rich in iron. It's properly a terroir that's suited for making long aging wines. And the estate itself has been there for almost 120 years at this point. And the founder of La Stoppa, kind of after traveling to Bordeaux kind of exclusively with his father for many years, saw the potential of our terroir being a great area to make long aging wines. So in the 1890s, he planted, we work with the same amount of hectarage that he worked with, but he planted almost exclusively French varieties.
How many hectares do you have?
So in total, we have 60 hectares of land, but half of them are planted to vines, and the other half is left to nature. We do, of course, have a huge garden project and animals in the works, and trying to turning the winery not just into a winery, but to the farm that it was at one point, which was Elena's father's dream, was to have a family farm. So Giancarlo Ageno, the founder of La Stoppa, he planted, when Elena's father brought the estate, there were 44 different varieties planted.
Wow.
So this was in the early 70s, in 1973. And just like Giancarlo, he didn't come from a winemaking background. First and foremost, all of us are consumers before winemakers. And Giulio, even him being a winemaker and technically trained in winemaking, he's more of a consumer than a winemaker, and winemaking should be a result of experience and knowledge coming from your observations from what's around you. And he has 38 years of winemaking experience, so his knowledge and his intuition is something that is just incredibly valuable. So Elena's father, not a winemaker. Elena herself, not a winemaker. She owned a record store and a bookstore. She traveled the world. She speaks many languages. She's one of the most well-read people I know, and also my best friend. And her dad owned a printing company, so they came from a print background.
Yeah.
So I think that could be why Elena's followed this path of loving books and having a bookstore. But he grew up passing La Stopa, and the place is epic. It is a really breathtaking place. And his dream, his childhood dream, was to buy this property and have a farm with his family.
Yeah.
So,
but if you tell us more about the La Stopa, the estate itself, when it comes to soil type, elevation, and climate.
Yeah. It's very hot where we are. Mm. It's kind of shocking because you can drive 100 kilometers away to Piemonte, and you can be at the same elevation, and the weather patterns are completely different. Where we are, we're about 250 meters above sea level.
Okay.
All red clay, like I said, very, very warm. But if you go 10 minutes away where I live, it's already 500 meters. It's much more calcareous soil. The tops of the hills are much more white. The bottoms of the hills, of course, resemble the vineyards at La Stopa.
Mm.
And then if you go to where Giulio lives, which is just 10 minutes further down the river, he's at 700 meters, much steeper vineyards, much more calcareous soil, so completely different wines coming from those regions. Mm. So in a very small amount of space, you have a diversity of wine that is just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And of course, being the fact that we're in a very kind of forgotten part of Emilia-Romagna, when people come, they fly to Milan and they take a train and they go directly to Bologna, or they go to Modena, or they go to Parma. They forget about Piacenza and they forget about this valley.
Why do you think they do that?
I mean, food.
Yeah. But why do you forget about
Piacenza? I mean, Colli Piacentini as an appellation, there are 17 different DOCs, and most of them don't have anything to do with the indigenous varieties. There's everything ranging from Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Sauvignon Blanc, Sparkling Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, and the list goes on. So the identity for a winemaking region is kind of very saturated with many things. So something La Stopa has done in the past is worked with those varieties that were historically planted there. Giancarlo's original intentions were to make wines to mimic Bordeaux. And it's only in the last 25, 30 years that we've scaled back on all the wines that don't make sense for A, the climate, and B, the tradition and the terroir, and we make wines that make sense for the identity of our estate, which is working with Barbera, Lonarda, Malvasia Candidamatica.
Yes. But do you think that it's a problem for Emilia-Romagna in general, that is, it is so differentiated, and so many grape varieties and all that. Is it?
I think appellation systems can be really good for some and really bad for others. If for example, you're a small producer in Barolo and you happen to bottle within the appellation, your consorzio can take your wines everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But if your appellation system has 17 different DOCs, You could try a wine and you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to of course represent the tradition and the terroir, and our DOC I think could benefit from focusing a bit more and not having such a wide range of wines. We fortunately have there's a movement of like-minded farmers, and there's a movement of people that are not looking to produce mass production industrial style wines, and making wines that my neighbors make, my village of 14, everyone makes their house white and their house red, and they tend to resonate with what wines like this more so than the heavily produced Merlot or sparkling Sauvignon Blancs that don't make sense for them. So it's 6.5 really. And Emilia Romagna is a huge, huge region. It's, after coming from Sicily, I wasn't expecting to find the same breadth of diversity in a space that's relatively small. And you go from east to west, and the food is completely different. Of course, very similar things throughout, lots of fried bread, lots of cured meat, etc. But the wines make sense with the food that we make. And if you go to Parma, for example, or Modena, Lambrusco, sparkling red wines from Lambrusco, cleanse your palate completely differently than our sparkling red wines that are made with Barbera.
Yeah, cool. Let's maybe try some wine then and see what was what. Because
okay.
we have had The first one we're trying is the Trebbiolo, right? Trebbiolo Rosso,
yep.
Which was at Systembolaget earlier this year in this small partie sortimented.
This is our new vintage.
Yeah, this is because 2015 we had in Systembolaget.
Exactly.
This is 2016. Yeah, can you tell us about this wine?
So, in comparison to 15, very similar growing seasons. To me, I think Trebbiolo is a great introduction to the rest of our wines. In our region, this blend of Barbera and Bonarda is typically found in many versions. You make a still, you can make a sparkling, you can make a slightly sweet version, you can make a superiore and a riserva. And it's all kind of based off of the quality of the fruit and the age of the vines.
Mm.
And for us, we make Trebbiolo from the youngest vineyards, but also from the lowest portions of the vines, so the lower parts of the hills. What happens, of course, is over time, the topsoil goes to the bottom. The profundity of the topsoil is much greater, so the plants themselves have more fertile soil below. So the fruit, the vines can be the same age at the top and the bottom, but the fruit can be completely different just based off the fact that the soil is completely different. So from the low parts of the vineyards where we have bigger berries, more juicy fruit, and of course the younger vines which are more productive, we choose this fruit to make kind of our everyday wine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a short maceration. It's 60% Barbera, 40% Bonarda. Barbera, of course, is ripe about a week before Bonarda.
Mm.
macerated in stainless steel, aged in steel, aged in a bottle for about a year, and then released when it's ready.
Yeah, and made for quite early consumption, easy drinking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you have to think it is very warm where we are. So typically these wines are, I think they show better when they're served at a cellar temperature. But in this wine in particular, even chilled is a good option.
Yeah. It's very, very fresh. And very.
But I remember my first day picking fruit with Giulio. So he's made wine at La Stopa for 38 years. And he very easily illustrated to me why we make this fresh style wine with that fruit and why with our Riserva Macchiona, why we make a different wine altogether.
Mm.
He picked a cluster of fruit from a 5-year-old plant and picked a cluster of fruit from a much older, a 90-year-old plant. And without even, he's a man of very few words, and without even explaining it to me, he showed me the fruit and I was like, ah, okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, eat a berry. And you eat a berry from those young vine fruit and you see exactly, you can't take that fruit and age it in wood for a very long time. And it would be a shame to take the fruit from the 90-year-old plants who produce much less, ferment them shortly in steel and age that in steel. You can't make the same wine. So this could be why there are 5 different versions of the same blend of wines in our region. But I think where La Stopa truly succeeds is in the long-aging wines, the Macchiona.
Mm.
And Macchiona's been made forever at La Stopa. And when I'm pouring these wines in Italy, this is the first to go.
The
this
Trebbiolo.
Is the first to drink quick. Mm-hmm. And then people in my grandparents' generation have known Macchiona their whole lives.
Yeah.
And it's a benchmark for the potential of the ageability and the representation of our terroir.
Yeah. I think, I mean, Trebbiolo for me is like the wine you drink while you actually prepare the food.
Exactly, exactly.
So easy drinking. But tell us a little bit about Bonarda as a grape. I mean, how is it to work with that grape?
So between the combination of the two makes sense. Where one succeeds, the other fails. Where one fails, the other succeeds. Mm-hmm. So the blending makes sense. So Barbera, thinner skin, very high acid, very punchy. In a lot of ways, it's our savior, and when it's a warm vintage, there's still great acidity in the wine.
Mm-hmm.
Bonarda, on the other hand, it's a much more finicky variety. It's much more temperamental,
mm-hmm.
and it's thicker skins. Kind of all the structure and all the color comes from Bonarda.
Mm-hmm.
And Bonarda is typically cultivated where we are, and then if you go to Lombardia, they call it Croatina. When it's on the vine form, but when it's in the wine form, they call it Bonarda. And then if you're in Piemonte, they always call it Croatina.
Oh.
So it's always the same. Bonarda is always the same. But despite the name differences. The confusing thing about Bonarda for me is a lot of people will try these wines and be like, oh, I know Bonarda. It's in South America. But Bonarda in South America was taken by Italians in South America, but it's Bonarda that doesn't exist anymore in Italy.
Oh.
So genetically, completely different than Bonardas you find in South America. Mm. So the structure, I think, and the color comes from the Bonarda, whereas the acidity comes from Barbera.
But do you ever do
100%
single grape? Single.
It's not
grape,
a no. tradition for us. The tradition is to always make the blend.
Yeah.
If you do go to like Valtidone, there are people that will work more with 100% Pinata, and other producers outside of our region will make 100% Pinata.
Yeah.
But for us, Barbera is our if the pig is our spirit animal in Emilia Romagna, Barbera is our spirit grape. So Barbera, it makes sense for us to make single bottlings of our single variety bottlings of Barbera more so than it does with Pinata.
Yeah.
Especially because it's also a very finicky grape, so sometimes we won't have enough fruit that we could have that opportunity to explore that way.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So now I think you're trying Macchiona from a very...
class number two. Macchiona...
2002.
Okay.
So 2002 was a pretty across-the-board disastrous year in not just Italy, but all over the world, or all over Europe.
Mm.
Very cold, very wet, very rainy. And we something that L'Estopa has been doing for many, many, many years now is this decision to not manipulate the wines to make them more ready, but to have patience and age the wines and release them when they're ready.
You work organically, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In our vineyards, we're certified organic, but of course, if you certify your wines organically, you can do a lot more things that are less... kind of leaning on the philosophy of working organically. But in the vineyard, it's of course very important for us to work organically. In the cellar, the wines are no manipulation, so no added nothing,
no
subtraction, exactly. Yeah. And filtration is a very, sometimes can be a very touchy subject because I've worked in restaurants and people will look at the wine and be like, what's this?
Yeah.
And for me, it was shocking to go to Italy and see people clamoring over the last bit of the bottle because that's the most kind of interesting part of the wine. It's also the closest to the identity of the wine. And also, why would you work a year in the vineyard to produce something and then strip away something right at the very end? So... 2002, testament to patience and Giulio's intuition, and we picked the fruit, and we started picking Barbera, Bonarda, we started picking as well, and then we saw the weather was changing, and so we picked everything. So Bonarda didn't necessarily get the hang time that we wanted, so it didn't have the sugar that we wanted going into it. And Giulio was like, you know, it's fine. The only thing we have to do is just be patient and wait. And so we went about our business. So Macchiona is a completely different vinification. Much longer maceration, so up to 45, 50 days maceration on the skins. And then the wine is aged in botti, so they're 50 hectoliter barrels.
It was a blend between Barbera and Bonarda.
Exactly, it's essentially the Riserva of the Trebbiolo.
Oh, okay.
So the blend is different, this is 50-50. The Trebbiolo, on the other hand, is 60-40.
For being in 2000, I would never have guessed.
No.
2002.
No.
It still feels quite fresh. Young and yeah. very, very fresh. And
I mean, I feel very privileged and honored to be able to work with my best friends, but also wines like these. And when I'm pouring these wines in various wine fairs, like Lydie, for example, some of my best my winemaking heroes come and they try Macchione from 2002, and they're like, I didn't realize you could make a reserve of wine in 2002. No. We declassified all of our wines and we put no faith in them. But Giulio, honestly, and Elena have patience, and you try the wines every year. Yeah. And then in the end, when they're ready, they're ready. So Macchione was released in 2012. So it spent 10 years in our cellar before it was released.
Oh, wow.
So 10 anni dopo means 10 years later. So we released it much later.
I see. And then we have the 2000...
Five and six. You have right now in your glass, this is 2005.
Five, yeah, perfect.
So I grill Giulio all the time and ask him what his favorite vintages are and lots of technical information, because I feel like as a representative of the winery, I have to have all the answers. Mm. And he's like, Nico, don't learn too much because you'll take the romance out of what you're learning about. And I'm like, yes, but people ask me, how long is the maceration? Why did you leave it in wood this long? Why did you leave it in bottle this long? And what it comes down to is there is no formula. It's a matter of observation. Mm. But when I do ask him his favorite vintages in the past, favorite growing seasons, 2005 and 6 were more on the ideal spectrum of growing seasons. He says after 2002, there hasn't been a span of time that's been consistent enough to have like five great vintages in a row.
Wow.
They all are great vintages, but they're all representative of the growing season.
Yeah.
And I think having transparency in the growing season, it helps people understand the place a bit more. And of course you want to make a great wine every year, mm-hmm. but you also have to represent whether it was warm, whether it was cold, whether it was a difficult year, whether it was an easier year. And 2005 and 6 to me are wines that he likes to think of as more of the classic examples of Macchione and the potential of what the wine is.
Beautiful in the 05, a really beautiful combination of sort of a perfume and also a little bit of the darker notes, the more like a licorice feeling to it.
Yeah, to me,
the combination is beautiful.
These wines always have a very meatiness and ironness to them that when you are in the vineyard and you look down and you see the soil below you, you know exactly the wines. And you know, with the history of L'Estopa and the fact that we did make other varieties aside from our native varieties in the past, I've had the pleasure of trying those wines next to the current wines we produce. And despite the variety, even despite who made the wine, you can still see a sense of place in the wine, regardless of it being Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot or Barbera and Bonarda. Mm. And
but is it always 50-50, or does that depend on the vintage as well? No, always.
No, I mean, with Macchione, I think it's important to be steadfast and try to make 50-50 every year.
Mm.
Of course, Barbera is more productive, but with that fruit, we vinify Barbera by itself instead of changing the blend.
Mm.
And if you wanna understand the wine, you have to kind of make consistently the same thing and work the same way. And then you can see how the wine evolves and reflect the vintages even more so. So by changing, if we were to take the high quality old vine Barbera fruit and add a little bit more into this, the acidity would be completely different. Instead, cooler vintages of wine have higher acidity. Warmer vintages of wine have less acidity.
Yeah.
And the ageability is completely different in the wines.
06, what can you tell us about that vintage for the Macchione?
It was warmer than 05, but as dry. So, again, more or less ideal. It's only probably in the last 5 or 6 years that it's been consistently very warm.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change is real. And I've talked to not just wine growers, but I've talked to lots of farmers alike. And something I think that you'll notice across the board, I'm of course, as a wine consumer, I notice across the board that some of my favorite producers don't produce anymore.
No.
Or can't produce anymore, or they have to make compromises that they've never had to make in the past. And between the two growing seasons, 5 and 6, I would hope that in the future we have more growing seasons like that.
Yeah.
Touch wood, because we like that.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, it didn't rain from December until September.
Wow.
So
wow.
An incredible drought.
Mm.
Also, moving there in July, my husband and I arrive, and Elena was like, listen, we're going to go to the mountains. It's too warm for us to, this is not the best introduction to the Italian countryside for your husband. So we, it was 44 degrees consistently at night, and then during the daytime as well, it was in the high 30s. Oh, no, sorry, the opposite. 44 during the day, 38 at night, for a month. And so what happens is the plants, they shut down. They like they go into shock like they do in the winter, and they work to conserve all their energy. So fortunately, weather changed a little bit, and there were more temperature fluctuations, and we ended up having to pick our fruit a full month earlier than we've ever picked.
Full month?
A month.
Oh, my God.
And we picked in Ferragosto, which is in Italy, like a national holiday where no one's working. So fortunately, we didn't have a huge amount of wine or grapes to pick that year because of the heat and the drought. And so we didn't have to scramble to find a ton of people. but our production is about 40% less. The quality of fruit was excellent. It's just it's completely different than vintages like 2002 and 2005 and 6. This year, fortunately, we've had rain, we've had snow, we've had our winter, we've had our spring.
Okay.
And right now, there's so much to do. I'm nervous being away because I know that there's so much to do at home. And yeah.
But so far, it's looking good this year. But I mean, these three Macchionas really shows the ageability of the wines. Mm. I mean, all of them.
I feel
really, really fresh and vibrant and all that. Very energetic wines.
Mm. I think also at the same time, they, to me, read as wines from a warm climate.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the freshness is there, and I think that's Barbera.
Yeah.
Also, long macerations to extract all the tannin as a kind of preservative quality, but also as a to give the wine ageability.
Yeah.
And then the lack of filtration also, I think, has something to do with the ageability of the wine as well.
Mm.
I had people yesterday asking me, like, this structure is completely different than I was expecting from when you compare wines like this to some of our more industrial counterparts in our region.
Mm.
Those wines taste like skeletons of what they could be. Mm. And the identity of the growing season lies in the skins of the fruit. So it makes sense to macerate the fruit for a long time, and it makes sense to not filter the wine in the end. Because if you do, you're taking away the characteristic of the variety.
Yeah. But the name Macchiona, what does that come from? What does it mean?
Macchiona is if you're looking at our estate, right in front of our house is another house called Macchiona.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
They're essentially Ludi.
Huh?
And in the past, Macchiona would have been where the fruit came from, but now Macchiona comes from the best selection, the oldest vines, and this top parts of the vineyards.
Mm.
Macchiona, like L'Estopa, is a very beautiful house. And L'Estopa itself, it served as a watchtower for a castle behind us down the river valley.
Okay.
So when it's a clear day, you can see the Dolomites, you can see the Alps, you can see the whole valley floor, you can see Milan. So Macchiona also has an incredible view, but it's just it's the fantasy name of the wine, but also it's our heritage. It's our most important wine.
Cool. And we're gonna finish off with two Barberas, right?
So very atypical, actually. In our region, to vinify Barbera by itself, the tradition is always to make the blend.
To make the blend, yeah.
But like I said, it's a more consistent variety. It Barbera, unlike Bonarda, if it is a warm growing season or if it is a more ideal growing season, we'll have a surplus from these old vines.
Yeah.
And like I said, it would be a shame to put that fruit into something else and make a simpler wine, or to change the breakdown of the blend of Macchiona. So in good growing seasons, we'll vinify Barbera by itself.
So so only some vintages you do it.
Yeah.
And this is Barbera della Stoppa 2006.
2006.
And then also 10.
We have 10, which is a completely different growing season.
Yeah.
So we... Barbera has a few kind of unique characteristics. It's a... Like I said, our saving grace. In very warm years, even in warm vintages of our wines, Barbera still adds this kind of lift, and also it allows us to eat our food with our wines.
Mm.
So in a way, Barbera vinified by itself is not traditional, but it's us kind of paying homage to something that we understand as being kind of our coat of arms variety.
Mm.
So very, very high acid, when I'm with Julio during the fermentations and he's making me taste wines out of tanks, I can go through to three tanks, and all of a sudden my palate is I'm done. I can't taste anymore. He can try 10 tanks in a row and be like, this tank reminds me of this tank from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm learning how to observe patiently. But so Barbera also uniquely doesn't go through malolactic fermentation. Mm-hmm. It's not the case for all Barbera across the board. I think it's a combination of many things, the terroir being pretty specific to that. But it just has too high of acidity and too low of pH.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is you can take a bucket of Bonarda and you can put it into a barrel of Barbera and it'll go through malolactic fermentation and the wine will change and turn into a completely different thing.
But the vintage there, but you said that 06 was very, very warm and very dry.
Yeah. Barbera loves the heat, loves the sun. Yeah, it thrives in those vintages.
And 10
much cooler.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was very dry.
Oh, okay, it was still
so cool. Dry in the right parts of the season. Mm. To me, the 2010 and 2006 are night and day from one another. Mm. And aromatically speaking, I think you can see it immediately that 2006 reads as a warmer vintage, whereas 2010 has a much more kind of elegance and restraint that 2006 doesn't have. I think 2010 will be a very dangerous wine for me to keep in my house because we will drink it like it's water. But we also eat Copa like it's going out of style, so having wines like this with that is perfect.
Very approachable right now in the 10.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just lovely wine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the drier season that you actually, vintages that you do the single Barbera.
There's no rhyme or reason to it. But it typically does come from the warmer, drier growing season. Mm-hmm. So we'll have the surplus of Barbera.
Mm.
And the difference in our vinification between Barbera and Macchiona is very important. Barbera, because it doesn't go through malolactic fermentation, because it has a super high acidity, we ferment the wine the same way in tank like Macchiona, but then the wine's aged in smaller vessels in old barrique.
Oh.
The idea of having more of the wine contact with the outside allows the wine to kind of evolve quicker and become more approachable. With having this lactic acid still intact and having this high acidity, we need it to be in a smaller vessel so that it evolves quicker.
Oh.
Macchiona, on the other hand, because it is a blend of the two, has gone through malolactic fermentation. Putting it in a giant vessel makes sense because we don't want it necessarily to over-evolve. We want it to just breathe a bit.
Yeah.
And this length of time is always just dependent on the quality of fruit and the growing season and trying the wines. And we're consumers.
Mm.
We're during lunch, we drink everyone else's wine.
Yeah.
But once a week or more, we'll try all of our wines just to see where they're at. And it's good to reflect on everywhere else to come back to yourself and understand yourself a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. And before we round up, what do you, just in general, Emilia Romagna, in general, what would you say, what is the biggest, most important things happening in the region right now, and what do you think is the biggest obstacles right now for the region?
Okay, obstacles first.
Mm.
I lived in San Francisco for years, and in California you have a bounty of and diversity of food that is incredible. In Emilia Romagna, when I moved to Italy, I in my head still had this fantasy of this place having this breadth of everything, that you can find everything in Italy, all the food. But we are Emilia is like the second biggest producer of tomatoes in Italy, but there are like two types of tomatoes in Italy. So the biggest challenges, I think, are this industrial aspect of agriculture, whether it be in wine and whether it be in food. The most exciting things that I think are happening are the fact that there are a lot of people like myself and other young Italians that have moved away from their city lives and come back to kind of establish their roots in the tradition and try to bring kind of a new life to something that is in danger of disappearing.
Mm.
Of course, I mean, Emilia Romagna, they're night and day between Romagna and between Emilia. And every city has its own strengths and its own weaknesses. But in general, I think something that's really exciting is the sense of community in the farming that exists there with wine and non-wine farming. People listen to each other and they're understanding the climactic changes and trying to reflect off one another, not to make someone else's wine, but to make something or make a food product that actually makes sense where they are. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at La Stopa right now, for example, we consulted with. Do you know Elizabeth de Foradori?
Yeah, yeah.
Her daughter Mirta, she's, I'm bowing down to her. She's a green thumb extraordinaire, a master gardener, and she came and consulted with Elena and kind of looked at our soil and decided what vegetables we should plant for our garden. And there's a lot of other people doing this, trying to reintegrate diversity into their farms.
Mm. But when it comes to grape, because you said you've changed from like French varieties like Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon to the indigenous varieties.
Yeah,
is that a common thing amongst other producers as well? Or
yeah. I think, I mean, now it's slowly moving that way. There's still a lot of room to grow. Mm. But, I mean, having farmers with like decades of experience behind them, they know which varieties make sense and which don't make sense. And Giancarlo Ageno, he may have been ahead of his time at the moment, and he recognized the terroir and decided to plant Bordeaux varieties because he saw the longevity, the ageability in this type of terroir in the wines that he could produce there. So there is a long tradition of working with non-native varieties there. Yeah. So you find some really fantastic examples of wines, but for La Stopa and I think a lot of other like-minded farmers and wineries, it's important not to try to mimic another place. We can buy wines from producers who have a tradition and a terroir suited to making those wines. Why would we try to make something to be like them when we can support them? Mm. So that's something I think in the natural wine world that is different than the industrial wine world. We're not out to compete with someone else. We're out to support our friends and be on the same level.
Well, great. This has been super interesting. Thank you for taking the time, Nico.
No, it's my pleasure.
Lovely talking to you. And yeah, have a nice rest of your trip. We're going to Norway tomorrow, I heard.
Yes.
So
yeah. Yes.
Good luck with that. And
yes.
Hope
thanks
to see
for
you
the
soon.
Sunshine. Yeah. It's amazing here.
It's been lovely.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.